We are a long way from the days of dial-up internet connections. Now we have an almost endless choice of devices, devices that can connect us instantly to the world. The innovation enhancing our lives can also be an Achilles heel. I'm Megan Lynch. This hour, a look at how we're vulnerable to a hack. What can be hacked? The simple answer is anything and everything. We've reached an age where business and government rely on technology and computer networks. Consumer access to internet-connected devices is exploding. In this program, you'll hear from experts who will give us some concrete examples of where we are most vulnerable. First, it's important to understand the real level of threat. It's basically off the charts.
The consequences for modern society are potentially catastrophic.
Joe Shearer is Executive Director of Professional Education in the McKelvey School of Engineering and Director of the Cybersecurity Strategic Initiative at Washington University in St. Louis. Shearer spent more than two decades in the U.S. Air Force. While serving at the Pentagon, he was architect of the first national military strategy for cyberspace.
The modern communications infrastructure that we rely on a day-to-day basis, from everything from, streaming Netflix on your smartphone to passing messages at the nation-state level, it is inherently unsecure.
Why? Because it wasn't designed to be secure.
If we could go back 50 years or 60 years to the inventors of the internet and say, don't just design these protocols for survivability, but also incorporate security. If we could start with a clean sheet of paper and redesign the whole thing with security by design, we would probably be in a better situation.
That's not likely to happen, so we have patches and fixes. Shearer points out we're open to attack at any time.
Any determined actor that wants to get into a network will get into a network. It's that simple.
As users of this technology, we often don't help.
Really, if you look at it, the problem is us. It's the human element, the human factor, that really introduces the most insecurity into or modern communications and information infrastructure.
Some examples: using weak passwords, doing business on public Wi-Fi, or clicking links in emails without verifying the source.
We have cyber criminals all across the globe that it's a 9-to-5 job, and they're buying and selling access, and they're exploiting vulnerabilities that are really boils down to our inability, the human's inability, to do what needs to be done to make ourselves a harder target.
Experts say we let hackers get a foot in the door without much effort on their part. At a recent Gateway to Innovation conference in downtown St. Louis, I spoke with IT professionals between sessions. I asked about their biggest security worries.
Top of mind, what is the biggest concern you have?
Email.
Email, really?
Email.
In what form? What kinds of things do you see as being dangerous, risky?
Oh, it's so easy to embed vulnerabilities into email. You can attach them to a picture. You can, there's links inside of email that people just blindly click on and they don't even think about. So they're, it's the number one way of really passing malware to people's home PCs, into the office. And the weakest link are the people, because you can tell people don't click on those links and they're going to click on them.
People are generally the weakest link. Legitimate looking emails coming in, people thinking it's a vendor submitting them. They'll look at the URLs close enough. They click on it. They can engage in a conversation. It's very well crafted. They end up saying, yes, okay, we do owe you money. Then they work through the process of figuring out how to wire it to them.
So the email that I got from PayPal telling me I needed to verify my bank account after I'd already done it?
Oh, absolutely. You should totally click on that. Yeah. Give them all your information. Yeah. There's no legitimate organization that's going to ask for that over email, ever.
These tactics fall under the heading of social engineering. Using simple psychological manipulation, cyber criminals get people to cough up confidential information or trick them into opening a file or clicking links containing malware. Every year, Verizon releases a data breach investigation report. Email is a top concern.
The primary attack vector, the entry point, still remains far and away these phishing emails. So that's how folks are getting into the networks. It's the easiest path in. You don't have to be an expert to put together a phishing email to get user credentials that can be used then to gain access into some of these email systems.
John Loveland, Global Head of Cybersecurity Strategy at Verizon.
And particularly social engineering focused on senior level executives and companies. because the bad guys have realized that, you know, that's where the, you know, the CEOs have the keys to the kingdom, if you will.
Verizon's investigation revealed attacks against company executives spiked in the past year, top executives especially. They're 12 times more likely to be the victim of an email attack. Bad guys aren't just going after the biggest corporations either. Nearly half of all data breaches involved small business. Loveland has a cautionary tale from a friend who runs a medium-sized company.
His email was hacked. Somebody got into the email system and started sending emails out on his behalf requesting wire transfers, right, to the accountant or the CFO of the company. And he happened to be on vacation at the time in an unreachable spot. CFO thought that this was a legitimate email. Looked like it came from his account. It was worded in a way that seemed like it would have originated from, you know, my friend who runs the company. And so he thought it was legitimate and ended up transferring, you know, money to this bad guy.
Think you're too savvy to be fooled by an email phishing scam? Hackers have other ways to exploit basic human curiosity. Take the case of a dropped USB drive.
Certainly the idea that individuals represent the weakest link in security has been around for a very, very long time.
University of Illinois professor Michael Bailey heard theories that thumb drives placed in strategic places could be too much temptation.
We'll hear stories about, oh, if you want to get into such and such a company, you'll just drop some USBs in their parking lot and some employee will pick them up. And you can use this mechanism to get access to internal resources and then, you know, leverage that to do advanced persistent threats or other kinds of espionage.
Bailey and his research team decided to test the theory. They designed a social engineering experiment, dropping flash drives across the U of I campus.
Over 90% of the drives were picked up, and over 40% of the drives were accessed by individuals after they picked them up.
Accessing triggered a debriefing page and an optional survey, while a significant number of people said they loaded the thumb drive out of altruism, wanting to get them back to the owner. Bailey says it's obvious people were clicking on files that clearly would not give them that type of information. So if this exercise was really an attack, what's the risk?
Simply inserting the drive into your computer and poking around without opening things would still be a threat. See, what we measure is people double-clicking on things. This is no different in terms of threat than double-clicking on attachments that you don't know where they came from in email. Right? As soon as you double-click on something, this potentially opens up an application. We could have installed malware directly this way, or we could have given you a malicious PDF or a malicious web page, and that could have infected your browser. None of that really complicated stuff is necessary. Simply plugging it in by itself is enough to own your box. Double-clicking is enough for me to install a program. And then once I've done that, you know, we're off to the races. I can do anything with your computer. I've owned it.
Still ahead, there are many more ways we are vulnerable to a hack. Whether it's your workplace or your smart home, cyber criminals are knocking at the door.
It is real. It is happening. It happens every day. And again, it's all about opportunity. If they can keep hitting the same account over and over because they're on your device, why would they ever go away?
If you're connected to the internet, you're vulnerable to a hack. This is Megan Lynch. As you heard in the last segment, your workplace, whether that's a major corporation or a small business, is on hackers' radar.
And then here is our security operations center. This is where the 24/7 monitoring.
At Speartip in St. Louis, cybersecurity experts in the operations center monitor banks of displays, watching for attempts against clients. Those clients come from a broad range of industries, including manufacturing, finance, and healthcare.
Security events that we see anywhere ranging day-to-day from 1,000 to 10,000.
Speartip's Director of Security Operations, Jonathan Talk. Cyber criminals have a variety of motives, use a wide range of tools, and try to get access any way they can. Talk says hackers try the easy way in first.
Default credentials or weak passwords or things like that, because they can be scripted, they can be, you know, ran over and over again until they're successful.
Talk says if cyber criminals can't get direct access to the company network, they may try to gain entry through other devices connected to that system. Sometimes that's an employee's smartphone or laptop.
So if you go to the coffee shop down the street, be careful about what you're doing on your computer. Don't be doing banking on public Wi-Fi. Even work, if your work has a VPN, use the VPN. Don't work on things over public Wi-Fi because that's all easy to attract and to grab.
But guess what SpearTip deals with the most?
The most common thing that we see, though, as a consultant is business email compromise where someone's getting into an email, pulling information or trying to pull other people's emails from that account.
Cybersecurity firms are also seeing continued use of malware.
Ranging everywhere from attempting to steal passwords, in which case usually if a malware is doing that, it's a lot quieter, it doesn't want you to know that it's there, to financially motivated ransomware, which is a type of malware which wants to ransom your system, wants to basically make your files so you can't get to them so that you have to pay that person.
A recent threat assessment found that 71% of attacks against companies are for financial gain. One cyber gang alone believed to have made $6 million from ransomware attacks. Symantec's annual threat report found that 1 in 10 cyber attack groups use malware to try to disrupt business operations. That's a 25% increase from 2017. As SpearTip's talk points out, one malware attack can have multiple motives.
A lot of times we see a company get one machine that was maybe ransomed, so one machine that was encrypted, and they write it off as, okay, we stopped it, at least it didn't get anywhere. What they don't realize is all of the passwords, all of the information that was maybe pulled before that encryption started.
Sometimes, Talk says, hackers want to break into your system just to borrow your computing power.
Sometimes they just need a system so that they can go further in their own attack. So maybe your system is just another hop point so that they don't get caught, so they can use your system to kind of mask what they're doing. They don't want you to know who the bad guy is. So if I can use your computer to make it look like I'm in St. Louis and in reality I'm in San Jose, that's perfect.
It's estimated a quarter of security incidents are related to cyber espionage.
If you're looking at a nation state level, I'd say they have a pretty core mission to steal as much information as they possibly can.
Later in this program, we'll talk about the cyber realm and how it may be the next battlefront. For companies like SpearTip, cyber warfare is already here.
From my perspective, we say the next war, but in so many ways, we're constantly battling against nation state attacks right now. So how do you classify what's going on right now in the cyber field? You know, we're constantly getting hit from Russia, from China, from all of these different places. And so it's kind of the unspoken battle in a way that's already going on.
Outside the office, our society is rapidly embracing a connected lifestyle. We have smartphones, smart watches, smart homes, even smart toys for our kids. Soon we'll have smart cars that do all the driving for us. All of these things are part of the rapidly expanding IoT, the Internet of Things. They can interact with other devices and be remotely monitored and controlled. Experts say they're all vulnerable to a hack.
When we move into IoT, the initial focus is going to be on functionality and cost. And at times, those decisions and the trade-offs are made where security takes a secondary role.
I caught up with Michael McGlynn at a recent cybersecurity symposium. He's vice president for security solutions at St. Louis-based Worldwide Technology.
We're going to need to see a shift, particularly as we migrate to 5G and we migrate to a much more interconnected world. Security has got to be part of that foundational design and development process.
5G, fifth generation cellular network technology. It's better, faster access to broadband. That also creates a bigger attack surface. With 4G, roughly 2,000 devices can be connected within a square mile. With 5G, it can connect a million.
1 million devices. You're going from what, 2,000 to 1 million? This is like cyber criminal in a candy store.
Ladi Adfala is security strategist with FortiGuard Labs, the threat intelligence and research arm of Fortinet.
Alexa, play La Isla Bonita by Madonna.
La Isla Bonita by Madonna, starting now on Amazon Music.
Voice-activated assistants are one of the latest technologies being invited into homes, one that Adfala highlighted in a recent talk on cybersecurity. When you talk to Alexa, it uses applications called skills, programmed to help the device respond to your voice commands.
There's a technique that adversaries and cybercriminals use called skill squatting.
Skill squatting, a technique researched by the University of Illinois in Champaign, hackers have found a way to exploit the voice recognition function. Anyone who's used virtual assistants knows they're not always perfect at interpreting what you say.
Sorry, I'm having trouble understanding right now. Please try a little later.
That means Alexa, Google Home, Siri, or Cortana, any of your virtual assistants can likely be fooled.
So remember how it is you can tell Google Home or Alexa, you can tell it something, and it interprets it as something else? Well, I'm a cyber criminal. If I want to actually engage in skill squatting, what I do is I will go write a custom skill, but I will give it a name that sounds like the name of a legitimate skill.
What if, instead of Amex for American Express, a hacker created a skill for the very similar-sounding MX? If the device misinterprets what you've said, instead of being connected to your financial institution, you've been sent to a criminal organization.
Welcome to MX. Your account has been hacked. Welcome to MX. Your account has been hacked.
If this attack was real, it's unlikely you'd be alerted. Adfala says instead, malicious actors can use the connection between your voice assistant and your other devices, like your phone or computer, to exploit you.
I'm going to send them a nice, pretty page that looks exactly like the American Express webpage. And I'm going to ask for their information into their American Express account.
And what you might receive is a text or email alert that you click on looks every bit as official as something from a legitimate company. Take voice assistants to the next level. Adfala says if companies start to use them to simplify everyday functions, they could be giving malicious actors entrance to their servers or a way to just bug an office.
Ransomware hits your machine. You're there saying, talking, you're like, we're not gonna pay the money. And through Cortana, or any one of these hearing that, they can actually change their technique or their tactic. That's the capability that this can actually give them, which is mind-boggling.
The Internet of Things goes well beyond these voice assistants. You can control your home through smart devices, the lights, thermostat, even the aquarium. Yes, even a smart fish tank can put you at risk. It did at one casino.
You want to know what happened? It's connected to a computer that's on the network. I mean, that's all I had to say, frankly. All they had to do was compromise the IoT device, in this case, the smart fish tank, and then from that, they were able to hop onto the computer, right, on the network, and then from that, they were able to extract 10 gigs of casino data.
Are we taking a similar gamble with our smart homes?
The biggest thing I see with IoT devices, the biggest vulnerabilities that, you know, I come across and that we see all the time are hard-coded passwords, lack of any updates, and then outdated components.
Spear Tips Jonathan Tock. I'll have more about those hard-coded passwords in the next segment. Tock warns your internet service provider, where all your connections start, is another way to let cyber criminals onto the block.
ISPs like to use the same password for a whole street or for a whole neighborhood, which makes it very easy. If I was a bad guy and I knew this, I could go hit any street on the block potentially and get into their network.
The average homeowner now has about 20 interconnected devices.
It's projected to be 75 billion interconnected devices around the world by the year 2025.
More on how the Internet of Things is vulnerable to a hack.
That's just going to make it faster, more things possible, more ability to do it, but also give those same kinds of access and tools to the hackers.
I'll talk with cybersecurity entrepreneur Suzanne McGee next. We love our gadgets, but as you heard moments ago, innovation and security don't always go hand in hand, leaving us vulnerable to a hack. I'm Megan Lynch. To get more insights on risks from our favorite devices, I turn to St. Louis native Suzanne McGee. McGee is founder of two cybersecurity firms, TechGuard Security and Bandura Cyber. I have a list of things that we came up with that are possible targets or could be compromised, and a lot of those fall under this Internet of Things, the IoT. You know, everything from our phone to even smart toilets at this point and smart refrigerators. You know, when we talk about the risks and the possible threats out there, give us a sense of what the reality is.
Innovation, which we relish, and using the internet and this convenience that we have, this knowledge at our fingertips, talking to Siri, all of those kinds of innovations generally are deployed without security built in. You know, it's really like how fast can we beat someone else to market? And then the adoption rate is generally high and so exciting for all the new technologies. I mean, to think that your refrigerator could sense when you're out of milk and make that call automatically and then it's delivered, all kinds of crazy conveniences that we have. And that is all interconnected, sometimes device-to-device communications facilitated through the internet. And that's why they call this the Internet of Things. The average homeowner now has about 20 interconnected devices that are part of what we call the Internet of Things. And so the reality is that it's really hard to buy something now and really understand the risk that you have. So you're going to buy a refrigerator. You might not understand that that is pre-programmed with internet connectivity. So if you have wireless in your house and your wireless is turned on, it may go out, find that, so that it can communicate back to home base. So maybe it's like a whatever name brand refrigerator, they're going to be able to send information and data about maybe your utilization of that device, et cetera, without you even knowing it. And so these devices automatically can connect up to the internet through your home wireless, and then it can be actually a risk. So those devices are often hard-coded with maybe 5-7 passwords that are used for every single device that's sold. So all a hacker has to do is they've got to get a serial number. So maybe they hack into the company or somehow they see a list of serial numbers, and then they just go randomly trying the various passwords, and there might be, say, 7, if there's 7 different hard-coded passwords, and eventually one of them's going to work, and now they're in. So that means they have access to the IP address that that device is registered on, and they can use that device going through your own home internet system and router. They can then use that to launch attacks and become like a zombie and do denial of service attacks against organizations unbeknownst to you, because that IP address then becomes a route. So they send a message from that using the power of that computer and that device to send information or messages out of your system, aggregating them with maybe tens of thousands and then all flooding some network and just taking it down. And if it's critical, you know, that's a big deal.
I've heard people talk about these devices that do have these hard-coded passwords. I mean, is there no way as a consumer to get around that, to change the passcodes in them?
That's a great question, Megan. And here's what people are finally realizing is, and this is maybe government and regulating authorities, that this is not a good idea. And that consumers know you can't change that. This is not a changeable thing in these kinds of devices like refrigerators. So that becomes problematic. Even if you're computer savvy and you could figure out how to do it, it's not possible to do it because that's why they're called hard-coded. Now, you can protect your home by being sure that you're changing your router password on your internet wireless. And so many people just use the one that's printed, you know, it's on your router and you just go with it. I guess part of the good news there is each one of those is unique, so it's not like you're putting admin as your username and password. You know, usually they're long combinations of letters and numbers on those routers. But really, you should be even changing that up because there's a list that's listed somewhere because it's already typed on your device. So the best thing is where you can have some sort of control, you want to be sure that you understand how to change it. If not, and you're purchasing something, you want to ask the question, is this hitting the internet automatically? If you don't want that to happen, can I turn that feature off? If you do, can I change that password? And the regulators are catching up with the manufacturers. And California, last September, passed a law that says that manufacturers of these Internet of Things devices have to give each device a unique password. So even though it's convenient to just say, okay, we're going to do 7 and we're going to do, you know, tens of thousands of devices or 1 million devices around the world, and it's only one of those 7 passwords, of course, making it extremely vulnerable. California said, you know what, this isn't the be-all, end-all security requirement, but at least give it a unique password. If somebody can't change it, at least now it's unique. So they would have to go through 50,000 passwords, or they would have to somehow randomly figure that out. Makes it far, far less vulnerable. So that's one of the things that's happening. At the national level, they have tried over the past probably 5 years to have Internet of Things security regulations and policy put in place, and it never can get through both houses. They just haven't been able to make that happen. The fact that California passed this is an impetus now for them to really focus on this and make this move forward. So if people are interested, they can Google that and kind of watch the progress there. But that will help drive some protections for the consumer that they don't have to be, you know, a cybersecurity professional and figure out how to get in their refrigerator and change their password. That's absurd. So I think that's part of it. We've been asking too much of individuals to learn about and protect themselves in such a dynamic environment. This threat environment is constantly changing. Another example is something parents really need to be aware of, and these are these smart toys. There are dolls that actually your child can talk to, and then that doll, when your voice goes in, almost like a Siri, it goes into a database. So the doll, you could ask the doll a question like, why do birds fly? And then the doll goes into a database and does a search. So it's going out to the internet, gets the information, and then can answer the child. So this is a great learning tool, except there is a vulnerability where you can hack in. And if you're a really bad guy, you could hack in there, or bad gal. It could be either one. You then could listen to what the child says. In some cases, you can actually command the voice back and you can start talking to that child. And you might say inappropriate things. You might ask for more personal information. You might say, do you know your address? And then put your child at great risk.
You know, I was not really surprised when we saw the articles in The Atlantic about these home devices, Alexa and so on and so forth, and all the things they can do, and are they spying on you? I mean, is this wise to have these in your home? I mean, they do fun things, but have we once again put convenience and this desire to have new technology ahead of security in our homes?
I think you just need to be very cautious. I think it's kind of cool. My daughter was cooking and she's got Alexa and she needed a timer for something. Alexa, I need a timer for 30 minutes. And then the, you know, whatever, the KMOX radio station comes back on. And then so she's listening. And then she goes, oh, I need a second timer for XYZ. I mean, just without missing a beat. That's fascinating, right?
It's like Star Trek.
It's like Star Trek. It is completely amazing. Kids, you know, will walk up and just say, Alexa, and they get information and all that. There is also the other side you're talking about. That is really risky because, of course, it is in listening mode when it's on, because that's the whole purpose. I think it is gathering a lot of data. I think new privacy laws are going to start to take care of that. But my recommendation right now would be extremely careful where you put it. I would not put it into places where any sounds that are made or any discussions that are being held that might be more personal, you don't want to have it there. So maybe it's in the kitchen. If you have children around, then you still have to be careful, right? So then all of a sudden, if somebody hacking in, is there a communication happening? You know, it really is. Is it monitoring if anybody's home or not? You know, are they listening? Okay. There's always activity and then all of a sudden silence. Okay, that's the home we're going to break into. All kinds of reasons to be extremely careful. The other thing is you can turn it on and off. So if you're going to be routinely using it, turn it on, but then turn it off when you leave the kitchen. Don't leave it on all night. And that is true for some of these toys. There are on-off switches where it goes to the internet, and parents don't realize that. They're tired at the end of the day. They don't want to pick up toys, much less go in and turn off all the smart ones. And be sure they're not continuing, you know, if they're in the child's bedroom, continuing to be on and monitoring. So that would be my recommendation, Megan. But they really have some really interesting value as well for any number of reasons.
Is there any way to quantify how many threats we face in this country, both in the private and public sector, military sector each day?
You know, I don't have that statistic available. I would just say it is incessant. So we have put devices in, so these kinds of threat intelligent gateways and firewalls can do some of this kind of stuff too, can see all the traffic coming into your network, and it never ceases to amaze someone who puts it in. They had no idea that they were being hammered from China or Iraq or Russia all day long. I mean, it is off the charts.
That's Suzanne McGee, founder of TechGuard Security and Bandura Cyber. Coming up, why the next war will likely be fought on the cyber front.
Cyberspace is now a contested domain.
Our national security is vulnerable to a hack. Cyber criminals pose a grave risk to the world around us. Some experts say we live in the specter of an all-out cyber war. I'm Megan Lynch. The security of our nation is vulnerable to a hack.
The doctrine and the strategy around warfare has definitely evolved, and it's going to be a hybrid.
Mike McGlynn, Vice President for Security Solutions at St. Louis-based Worldwide Technology.
When we say cyber war, it's not in isolation. I think the next war is going to be a hybrid of conventional and cyber. It's not one or the other. Certainly in the U.S., we've created military commands that are focused on cyber and cyber warfare and cyber doctrine. So I think that any strategy going forward in warfare is going to incur both.
Cyberspace is now a contested domain.
Brigadier General Robert Lyman points out that cyberspace is now just like air, space, land, and sea. Lyman is Director of Command, Control, Communications, and Cyber Systems at the U.S. Transportation Command at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois.
So we've embraced that changing nature of warfare, and this is a space that's contested beneath the level of armed conflict today.
The same security issues that plague consumers concern military leaders.
Much of the access available to malicious groups is due to poor software update patching practices and poor user security patches, like clicking on links in phishing emails.
For U.S. Transcom in particular, the link to commercial contractors has to be absolutely secure.
You asked me specifically about threats, and a large amount of our transportation business is conducted with U.S. companies that are targeted every day by ransomware, advanced persistent threats, and criminal activity. It's a challenge for us because we're so heavily reliant on commercial carriers.
That includes transportation service providers and software developers. Those partners have to make sure security is built into systems from the beginning. Lyman tells KMOX there's been a definite shift as cybersecurity has become critical for daily operations.
20 years ago, you know, we would regularly patch software, but not with the sense of urgency we do today. And many times the focus of that patching or those updates would be new functionality, not necessarily focused on security and minimizing vulnerabilities.
The general says there's a new sensitivity to cyber threats.
The assumption is no longer when a system goes down or there's an anomaly that happens, with access to data. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the assumption was immediately something's misconfigured, a piece of hardware has failed, and now, you know, we still look at those things, but now we immediately look for malicious activity that may have caused something.
He points out that within the Department of Defense, there are now whole commands dedicated to cyberspace operations.
So we not only think about it from a security perspective, but we have what we call cyber protection and cyber mission teams specifically designed to look for malicious actors in the cyber domain and clear them out of friendly networks. So we're actually maneuvering, if you will, in the cyber domain with that maneuver force.
Lyman calls it active defense.
They're not guarding the castle walls, if you will. They're actually patrolling the streets to make sure that we don't have malicious actors out there. And so that their job is specifically to hunt within those friendly networks to seek out those malicious actors.
Cyber defense isn't all about technology.
But in the end, our best resource in doing that mission is not the technology, it's the defender. Behind the keyboard, behind the sensor there. It's about people, and our best strategy is recruiting and retaining talent.
All nation states with some sophistication are very worried about this, number one, and number two, working very hard to develop capabilities to both defend themselves and conduct offensive operations.
You heard from Washington University's Joe Scherer at the beginning of the program. Cybersecurity begins and ends with us. Scherer says the critical need in the cyber age is talent.
What I've discovered since I left the military, which was a bit of a surprise for me, is most of the professionals in the industry have come up through the information technology ranks and then made a switch over to cybersecurity. Now, some of them may know how the technology works, but unfortunately, the vast majority don't. And that hurts us.
The cybersecurity talent gap is being called a crisis by some. A recent Forbes article warned there will be as many as 3.5 million unfilled positions in the industry by 2021.
The attackers attack at a very technical, specific, precise level in a precise manner. And if we don't understand that, and our workforce doesn't understand that, it just makes it that much easier for those malicious actors to take advantage of us.
Scherer says we're vulnerable at every level of our society when it comes to our interconnected devices, our systems, and our security.
If you were looking for a hopeful answer, yes, we are 100% vulnerable. I like to say there's a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to cybersecurity, and it is indeed a train.
You've been listening to Vulnerable to a Hack. I'm Megan Lynch, St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.